This is me, John Gonzalez, and Nooman Mustafa here again. And welcome to another episode of our Thursday podcast. I think we're on episode number 13 now, if memory serves me well.
Actually, John, we moved to a season number two. So now season
Season
number two, this
two,
is episode one.
episode one. Oh, great. Season two, episode one. Here we go. Again, as usual, the podcasts are, as unscripted as we can make them. And so that we can invite experts from the cloud industry to share candidly their knowledge, customer learnings, and experiences in their cloud journeys, and specifically how they're thinking about tackling and what I would call the most fundamental critical cloud networking and security constructs. So today we're really pleased to have with us Jason Donahue from Observion. Observion are one of our critical partners, and Observion and Jason deals mainly, on the customer front, and I want to turn it over to Justin to introduce himself.
Yeah,
Justin.
so I'm Justin Donahoe. I'm the founder and CTO at Observion. We spend a lot of time with Aviatrix to the point where I feel like an honorary employee. I work with you guys pretty much a couple times a week. It's become a core part of our strategy when we're helping customers do hybrid architectures and cloud migrations. And it's just really sped up a conversation that used to be really awkward and clunky. So it's been awesome.
Cool. Justin, I may have butchered your name. My apologies.
Oh, it happens all the time. Don't worry about it. There's lots of O's. I get called Jason, Justin. It's all good.
So, Justin, one. So I think you. I think we have known you for a while now, and I think now when people are moving to the cloud and aggressively moving to the cloud, obviously, there's a lot of need in terms of trusted advisors and prescriptive guidance from people who have been there, done that. And I think you have been in the cloud from very early days, and you have battle scars, and you are probably one of those very trusted advisor partners that I've seen who can provide guidance all the way up, from end-to-end stack from a cloud perspective. So can you tell us something about, in the last, I would say 2, 3 years, right? How do you see the CSPs evolving? Which clouds are more prevalent now? And do you see that, enterprises are now looking for multi-cloud networking solution? And then how Observion fits into this whole scheme. So tell us something about the trends that you're seeing and what type of clouds are becoming prevalent in your customer engagements.
So Observion started out with a very AWS focused approach. Myself and others have a fair amount of AWS experience, and we moved into Google second, which kind of shocked all of us. We figured we'd go to Azure second. And now where we sit, we have an advanced AWS practice, a premier Google practice, and we're gold with Azure. So we're doing all three. And so it's really hard to be good at three clouds. I tell people I can do AWS with my eyes closed. I can do Google with like one eye open, and I use Google to do Azure. So I try not to do the hands-on Azure stuff. Got a whole team that does that. But what I'm seeing the companies start to do, Azure specifically, I've seen a fair amount of explosive growth in the data side. I'm seeing a lot of customers do their enterprise data warehouse, like you got on-prem Oracles and SQL servers. And they're going into like Azure Synapse, Data Factory, et cetera. So we've got a big data team that specializes in modernizing data warehouses. I'm still seeing a ton of compute and like generic workloads stay in AWS. It seems to be like if you were to do like a blind taste test with cloud, right? It's almost like Amazon's got the Starbucks logo, where if it's not blind, everybody just walks to the logo because they know it. Then on
Exactly.
the Google side, obviously the advanced stuff like ML is great. I really like GKE. It's tons of fun there. When GKE Autopilot came out, so I think more people are starting to consider Google. And then they launched a Google region here in Salt Lake for us, so we're seeing Google pick up more customers. I think Google's got some really great tech. People should definitely check out. And to answer your question about like multi-cloud, I would say most customers, if they're not already multi-cloud, they're thinking about it or they're at least designing for it in case the possibility happens. I would say half our customer base is in at least two clouds. And it's basically a primary cloud with very targeted specific workloads in a secondary cloud. for, you know, either a very specific managed service or for technology choice or insert other reason that I don't know.
So, Justin, that's great. The, you know, as a you know, cloud partner, cloud integrator, you've worked your way up, I'm sure, blood, sweat, and tears to become a trusted advisor now, you know, and you're multi-cloud. What are your thoughts on partners who are only still stuck with a single cloud or single CSP? Do you think enterprises would see that partner as strategic? Or do you think it's important that partners now skill up and get into multi-cloud?
I think it depends. I think if you're a partner that hyper specializes on a very specific thing and stick to that and only that, you can still do really well. I know some other partners that they specialize, like let's say in ML and BigQuery, and they really only go after Google customers. And then I see other partners where I feel like there's so many options and avenues you can go. It's like they're not great at anything. They just say they do everything. And I think those are the partners you need to be more cautious of. Mm-hmm. If they tell you that they know every AWS service, start asking them about, like, you know, ground control and, you know, game engine, all the weird services you don't usually see here, and like they'll fall apart, like, because nobody can know all those services. There's like 150 of them. I know like the 30 that matter. So I mean, from a strategic level though, if you are going to go down the path of doing multiple cloud providers, I think you need to really assess your tooling and try to take an approach that is truly platform agnostic. And so when we're doing this with customers, you know, we push a lot of Terraform and Pulumi because they work in all the clouds, but even just good software architecture. So even though you want to use a managed service, like let's pick on PubSub and SQS and Google and AWS, I can still use those services, but I don't have to be married. Where I see customers make a lot of mistakes is they will write their code directly to the managed service. And so now they're stuck, right? I mean, they're gonna have to do a decent refactor if they wanna move. Where I see the customers that really succeed in it, they'll make like a queue service that abstracts it and it makes an endpoint of like, you know, put item, get item, whatever. And then their other services talk to that. So then if they wanna move, they just update that one queue service to interface with the other cloud's managed service. And now they were able to move. And I get them oversimplifying it, but like that's the easiest example to kind of illustrate. It's like good software architecture still matters, even though you are dealing with a lot of cloud architecture.
No, I completely agree. I think far too often we see customers locked in, difficult to change. Customers didn't think about the architecture up front, didn't think about long-term strategy on cloud, and they were pushed to get to cloud very quickly and made a decision that they probably regret further down the line or have a lot of rework.
Yeah, it gets expensive when you have to go redo the redo.
Yeah. So Justin, you mentioned Salt Lake City, right? So tell us something about what areas Observion covers in the US. I mean, obviously, if it's up to me, I would clone like 10 Justins everywhere in US and provide this trusted advisory. But my question is, you know, how did you evolve, right? And what areas do you cover now? How did you evolve over time from, is this the customer who were asking you, or was it just your own evolution process that you started learning what's best services that you can provide to your customers in different clouds? And then, you know, what will be your advice to customers? Because one of the things that I'm seeing is the big traditional partners, right? And I was talking to one of them, and the guy who leads their sort of strategy, right? They say that the way they are able to now know that they're becoming irrelevant is by the fact that they are not part of their future strategic conversations. They're just being excluded. They're not being invited. And this is basically, you're talking about like the big and big partners, right? Who have their top three customers no longer inviting these partners to their future cloud strategy. And the reason is because they don't feel that they have the competency, right? So from your perspective, I mean, talk us something about what is the coverage area for Observion, and how did you evolve yourself from being the AWS to being advisor now in multiple clouds? And obviously there could be many things that you can be expert at, but what is the process look like for Observion?
Yeah, so we have a couple of swim lanes that we try to stay in. Mm-hmm. So like we know what we're good at and we know what we're not good at. And you know, we hyper focus on app modernization, and with app modernization comes cloud migrations or hybrid architectures, whether it's on-prem cloud or multi-cloud or all three. Then we do a lot with big data, like doing the modernization of data warehousing. I've got a pretty interesting background in the big data space, so it makes sense that we kind of went there. A lot of the people on my service team worked with me at Ghostry before Observion, and we got a ton of hands-on trial by fire in AWS. Mm. And then we have a security and compliance team. One of my co-founders, Scott, he was working at another partner in New York when we started this, and he specializes in doing compliance and cloud security. He's worked with some pretty big name companies, and he helped move a bank from hundreds of data centers to AWS only. And then we have another guy, his name's Brad, who is our head of cloud security out of Colorado. And he used to do penetration testing for AWS services before they would go generally available. So we really kind of stay in those swim lanes, right? So it's, if you need help with app modernization, big data, security and compliance, like that's our sweet spot. We do set up big data to get into ML. And so we'll help some customers there, but you know, and we're not trying to be a partner that does everything. Like we don't do custom app dev. So if it's like, hey, I want you to write me a web portal for my healthcare company, it's like, yeah, that's not what we do. But if you're like, hey, we have this web portal, it's on-prem, can you help us, you know, containerize it and take it to AWS? Yeah, we'll do that all day long. So we try to be very like prescriptive of what we do and what we don't do. And then that's kind of led us into, we're branching out into other areas because, you know, once we started down this path, when we first started, we were, I guess you can call us naive because we are so biased towards cloud. We hit a market like Salt Lake that I don't think was ready for us, if I'm being honest. The first year was really hard. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of, we'll call them VARs, you know, value-added retailers that did a really good job at like inserting themselves, selling hardware. And like, they just wanted to do it on-prem. Mm-hmm. And I try to describe this, and I've done some other podcasts where I talk about this, but it's like almost like there's an emotional attachment to their VMs, right? Like if I say I'm going to pick up your VM and I'm going to put it in the cloud, they'd get really like, no, why would we do this? But so we were kind of failing, and we started spending a lot of time, Dan, who runs modernization for me, we started really looking at containerization because we were doing it, but not at a way that we could teach it, right? It's like, yeah, we had experience with it. So we spent, I'd say, a good year just developing curriculum to teach people how to do containers. Because what we noticed is the same people that would be emotionally attached to a virtual machine, when I showed them containers or Dan would start walking them through why containers, they got really interested and excited. And you could see it like a spark went off in their head. And they had the same passion about when they were learning VMware and ESXi for the first time and going from bare metal to virtualization. Now containers were cool. And while it wasn't, you know, hey, give them some containers and we're magically going to the cloud, it did ease their comfort level. And a lot of the engineering teams were already trying to go serverless or containers. So getting the two parties together, that's when our business really started to pick up. Mm. And working through, you know, various customers with AWS, we got a pretty good name for ourselves. They started pulling us into other accounts. Google came to us. We were kind of skeptical, and then we played with the tech for a couple of weeks and we were like, yeah, this is awesome. So I started going to, you know, every Google training I could. I went to like, I got the big data cert. I went to, you know, different sessions. I'd talk to, you know, the cloud functions team because I like serverless quite a bit. And suddenly we were a Google partner. And where we've kind of found a niche is customers that are going from AWS to Google. Mm-hmm. We speak AWS and Google. So we almost help translate it and show them like, you know, this is the construct that you used to do over here. Now you can do it this way. It's a little different, but very similar. And then Aviatrix kind of came in. The story of how we got there, I don't want to rattle on too much, but we have a customer, his name's Scott Foster. He works at Merrick Bank. I was helping him lay out his network and he kept wanting to put Palos into AWS. And like, we tried different designs. We were talking to Palo. I was like, this just seems hard. Like, why does this seem so hard? Because I've seen people do it and fail miserably. Mm-hmm. And then he went to some meetup with a Palo Aviatrix thing. He came in next time I was in his office and like slammed a one sheet in front of me. It was like an Aviatrix one. He's like, can you check these guys out and see if they're any good? And that's literally how we met. And it's kind of been history ever since. Like now I feel like I work with you on almost every account I touch.
Hey, do you know what? I was just going to ask you, how did you get introduced to Aviatrix? You second guessed my question, Justin. That's great. Just on that a little bit, how do you package up, you know, the Aviatrix solution, the solutions that you offer from Observion? How do you package that up for a customer to provide, you know, a business outcome?
So one of the things that I like to do that I think is unique, maybe it's not, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like a lot of customers and partners, they focus so much on the applications that like they just get hyper-focused on moving compute and get it going. And like all the little nuances of networking and like IP management and just planning out your VPCs and subnets and CIDRs and all of that, they kind of don't do it. They're almost like, oh, it doesn't matter. It's all virtual. And it's like, no, that matters a lot. So when we're setting up a customer, one of the first things that we do, if they're net new, like let's say you're on-prem only and you want to go to AWS, I like to do an account planning session where we show you how to do a multi-account strategy. And we're really trying to set up a good foundation. If you think of like a pyramid, it's like, you're not going to get to the applications until you have things like account structure, tagging, networking, monitoring figured out. Then we start looking at, you know, what managed services do you need? Okay, now that we have two layers of our pyramid, let's put the peak of the pyramid, which is your application, on top. I try to approach it that way. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of Terraform. We can stand up a controller for a customer with Terraform and, you know, a single phone call. And from there, we show them how to do like, you know, a transit architecture. Like we'll do TGWs with customers and they see all of the different nuances of like route table management that they have to just do basically by hand. And then you show them Aviatrix and how it automates it, and it almost sells itself.
Right.
Yeah. And I think you brought up a good point. And I think we see that also, Justin, that I think people have missed the boat for, I think, 4 or 5 years, right? When people were actually sort of, CSPs were becoming more mature. The partners who sort of thought that, hey, CSP provides everything, so let's just focus on the application play, right? And a lot of networking vendors, they thought that, hey, they don't have a play in the CSP world. So nobody actually focused on it, and Aviatrix just kept building and building. Saw that market very early, and I think Steve Mullany, Justin, you know very well, he gave an example of Sandals, right? Sandals Resort, where, you know, hey, you got a brochure saying that you will get XYZ, and when you go there, you have one sailboat, and it's 4:30 a.m. booking, and there is no choice of wine except for red wine and white wine. So there's a lot of things that you see or realize when you go in there, and all you get to work with is partners who just specialize in applications, and they have no knowledge or skills around networking and security and compliance and governance and security posturing and how to do your traffic engineering. And that's where I think Aviatrix comes in the picture. And I think it has been absolutely, I would say, almost like a hand in a glove type of relationship with you guys, because you guys specialize in certain things which are absolutely needed in the cloud. And I think you guys just are an absolutely born in the cloud profile partner that a lot of enterprises needs to work with. And it's just a beautiful solution. Now, one thing I do want to know from you, right, is you mentioned about containers, right? And how you work with people who have, you know, sort of emotional attachment with their virtual machines running in an on-prem world. And now they see the light with Kubernetes, and all of these CSP providers have their own Kubernetes solutions. AWS, EKS, and GKE, and AKS with Azure. And then now the traditional vendors like VMware, right? They're also trying to be relevant in the cloud by coming out with something called Tanzu, where they're saying, hey, you need to have this VMware-based ESXi, and then we will embed our Kubernetes, which is basically a pivotal type of variation, into it, and add service mesh to it. So do you see a play for that type of, if you have to advise a customer, or customer ask you, do I go with GKE or you know, AWS EKS, or should I look for my existing vendors who were sort of on-prem and now they want me to continue using them in the cloud? What would be your frank advice in that regard?
So it's a good question because it's one that I run into quite a bit. Mm-hmm. If they're, you know, AWS only or Google only, I just say use GKE and EKS. If they are trying to run containers on-prem and in the cloud, and I mean, Anthos has a cool story you can use. It's got its own drawbacks. It's newer, but I mean, the one thing I kind of don't like about it is it kind of locks you into the Google console. You have to manage everything that way. Mm-hmm. But for Tanzu, for example, I've started to see some customers use it. I've seen one customer pick it up and they didn't have the best experience with the installation. And so I was kind of, I want to say turned off by it. But then I spent more time with the Tanzu team working with them directly. And they've actually got really good tech. I mean, Pivotal was great, right? They got acquired. So when it comes to like hybrid containers where you truly have an on-prem play, I think it's worth checking out Tanzu and Anthos. But if you're single cloud, that's like, just use the managed service thing. It's not hard. It's right there. And even if you're multi-cloud, but you're cloud only, I don't think it's the end of the world to run, you know, GKE and EKS. Because it's not like you're going to have one workload span both clouds in most cases, right? So you might have a team that does stuff in Google, and so they've got their own GKE cluster. You have another team that does stuff in AWS. They have their own EKS cluster. When you start getting to the point where you want a workload, like a single workload to span multiple locations, that's when I think you have to use something like Tanzu or Anthos, or like, I don't know how else you're going to do it without a lot of, you know, replication and repeated task. Because, you know, data is always the hardest part, right? So keeping your databases in sync across multiple clouds is going to be really hard. So you need something that allows you to deploy workloads very targeted into any runtime. And so that's where I think Anthos and Tanzu really kind of have a good strategic play.
Yeah, and I think Azure is also coming out with something called Azure Arc, which will be the basis of something very similar to Anthos in the Kubernetes world. So I think a lot of these CSPs are realizing that the world is multi-cloud, and whatever story they have around Kubernetes needs to expand multiple clouds, and they want to be able to provide that single pane of management from their cloud provider. So I think Anthos, you know, Azure Arc or the variation of Azure Arc in the Kubernetes space, Tanzu, right, wherever it matters, would be some play for enterprises. But I would say that CSPs may have an edge because obviously, you know, it's a managed service. It's something that they provide directly. You don't have to worry about multiple vendors in the mix. So it's an interesting space to continue to watch out for, I guess.
So, I mean, if you're all in on AWS, EKS anywhere looks really cool. So, it's kind of built off Outpost, right? Where you can ship an AWS rack to your data center. They're coming out with EKS anywhere. I'm not sure exactly when it comes out. I know it's supposed to be due this year, and it allows you to run EKS on your own infrastructure. So I don't think you have to, you know, really pick one yet. It's like the market's changing too fast. I always tell people, if you can wait 6 months, wait the 6 months, because technology is going to change so much. People that are like, we have to do it immediately right now. It's like, well, I don't know. If you could just wait a little bit, you could get this really cool thing.
Yeah. Exactly.
Trouble is, you keep waiting and you wait. When do you get going?
Yeah, and then the good thing about Avitrix, though, right, is we are working, because I think at the end of the day, all these solutions requires underlay networking and security and monitoring and visibility. And I think we are working really nicely with GKE and those Azure Arc. So I think it's something that we can ease the pain in many ways. And also, underlay to service mesh in many cases. So that has been a good solution story for us as well.
Yeah, it would be awesome if you guys had like a Tanzu and Anthos plugin, like where you just shipped with them, because you handle the multi-cloud network architecture like so clean. It would just, you can just stamp out networks. It's really easy. It'd be awesome if you guys were the backbone to something like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Justin, what message would you give there's still some customers, lots of customers out there that still prefer networking security using cloud native as opposed to, you know, a cloud native plus like Avatrix? What's the message to those people?
So I run into this one pretty much everywhere I go. And one of the fastest ways I get somebody interested in at least checking out an Avatrix demo, I just ask them, hey, remember that time where you couldn't figure out why resource A couldn't talk to resource B and you burned like 4 hours. Almost anybody who's deep into the cloud will be like, oh, that just happened to me yesterday or like last week. And it's always something stupid, like a security group, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I forgot that. And I just spent 4 hours for one CIDR block missing. So I show them, you know, I was like, what if I told you there was something I could put those two things in and say test, and you know, you get like a flight plan, the test path. Mm-hmm. They'd be like, really? That'd be awesome. I'm like, all right. So how many times have you been asked to, you know, diagram your network, but your environment changes so often that you actually don't know what it is at any given time? They're like, yeah, we have that problem all the time. Once you make a network diagram, it's out of date. It's like, what if there was a tool that would like auto do that for you? They're like, that's really cool. And then the other one that's kind of, it's more funny, but it's true, right? It's like, how bad would you like to be able to do packet capture and ping and trace route? You know, these really revolutionary technologies. And they're like, yeah, I do kind of miss those. Cause I mean, parsing VPC flow logs is horrible. Like, and when you are having a network event and you're all in AWS native or whatever native, it's like, how can you tell if you messed up or if they're, the cloud provider's down or like where the problem's coming from? Like, I feel like networking isn't a focus for cloud providers. It's like a necessary evil. So they give you like a virtual firewall and say, good luck. Yeah. And there's no visibility. And so you can spend hours chasing something that might not even be your problem. And so like, I use those kind of key points using my own experience and what I've struggled, because I was doing multi-region AWS back when like VPC peering didn't exist. And we were like running our own open VPN tunnels between them. And then we got VPC peering and then we got transit gateway. So I've seen a lot of change in the networking space, but the one thing that's never changed is I don't get monitoring and visibility. Like, I don't know why that isn't a thing, but for you guys, it's good for you.
Yeah. Yeah, and all really, really good points on the Aviatrix solution. Yet you still see, especially large enterprises, it's almost like they have to feel the pain on what the decision they've made to use native before they'll make any change, you know, or they'll realize there's something better out there for them.
So I worked with a customer that had like 100 VPCs and they were trying to consolidate and move stuff around. And they were doing it with all sorts of different appliances. I don't remember off the top of my head, as well as VPC pairing. And so I kind of did a quasi bake-off where we did a lot of planning on, you know, let's lay out all your VPCs and make sure we don't have CIDR block collisions. And okay, we ran some tooling. It was crazy how many VPCs they had because they're in so many different regions. I was like, all right, let's do a POC where we spin up two accounts. We were teaching them Control Tower. And let's do a TGW. So we'll have a network account and account A and B. And then like, let's just, you know, mess with this, add some routes, and let's add a third account and add some routes. So I was like, you see how every time we add this, we have to keep coming back and changing it. I was like, all right, let's do the same bake-off with Aviatrix. And that right there, that exercise sold them on it. When they saw that they didn't have to do the TGW route table circus, they were like, yeah, this is way better. So we were able to save them from a lot of pain up front.
Yeah.
But they'd already kind of experienced the pain from before. And I feel like some people, there's like a stigma that like being all cloud native is better. You just have to break through that with either pain stories or little POCs like I just described.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, John, I also feel that it's just the humans, right? They need to realize this at their own pace. You can't really force them. And we have people who have told us that, hey, we made the decision and we have to stick by that decision because it's a job on the line, right? And if you don't have executive level of sponsorship or empowerment to do the right things now, you will always do that. So that has been always been the case. And, you know, people who realize this, they are now understanding, even the big enterprises, that, you know, our job is not to worry about cloud native and cloud formations and keeping the lights on. Our job is to make sure that we get the innovation and this, you know, we move with the speed of opportunity, right? Because cloud is all about the speed of opportunity. If you cannot avail the speed of opportunity, either you will be wiped off because you have a competitor who can do things much faster in the cloud or multiple clouds, or you are just stuck with you know, the day-to-day operational challenges of managing the cloud, and which will again result into you know, slowness into your adoption of the cloud, right? So it's all about, and I think, but I think the experiences, right? That's why I feel that partners like Observian and Justin are important, because they are the ones who can actually bring you or fast track your journey to the cloud by giving you things that actually work, right? So instead of spending 2 years to learn something and then do the course correction, it's better to get in touch with the right partners, right? Not every partner.
Right, exactly. The specialist partners that have done this, got the experience, they know the pitfalls, you know, like you, Justin, Observian, great value add, in my view, you know.
So actually, one more question I have for Justin, right? And this is very interesting, I would say, for the partners, right? The dynamics are so much changing. If you look at a traditional world, you have these channel partners, right, who are just sort of packet, you know, paper pushers, do the transactions for you, or they just sell the hardware and software. And then you have your professional services partner, right, who basically provides services. And then you have your MSPs, right, who basically manage things for you. Now, in the cloud, right, the cloud has sort of made the lines a little blurrier, because at the end of the day, you are not selling any hardware or software. Right, it's CSP who's managing it for you, right? And what I'm seeing is the people or the partners who have the skills are the ones who basically are grabbing all the three, if they want to, all the three different you know, areas where traditional partners were sort of siloed. Hey, I'm just a transaction only partner. I'm a PS partner. I'm managed service. Now it's about, hey, my cloud is giving me all the hardware, software, you know, and managing it for you. And if I have the skills, I can actually do all the things for you. So do you see the same thing where, you know, the lines are getting a little blurrier, and then even smaller partners are starting to bring managed services or MSP model. And I think even with Aviatrix, I'm seeing a lot of partners who were traditionally not MSPs, they are becoming very interested in using Aviatrix to be the MSP to their end customers, right? Because it just makes it easy. It fast tracks your skills in the cloud. So you can have your day-to-day SRE team spun up very quickly to manage the end customers. And just is basically you focus on services and application modernization. So has this been your experience, or what are your thoughts on that?
So you asked a lot of things, and then you said some things before that. So a couple comments I have before I answer all those questions was, you were talking about when a customer is stuck in a situation, they're like, oh, we made the decision, we kind of have to go with it, or, you know, the job's on the line. I feel like terrible leadership is a problem. If you have leadership that doesn't allow you to fail and experiment, your cloud journey is going to suck. That's just how it is. I was on a pure performance podcast where I spent an hour just talking about every time I failed in AWS. And I know I only got through about 10% of my failures. And the reason we were able to skill up and move quickly is because our leadership, like I was part of the leadership team, but they kind of not only gave us the freedom to fail. I mean, they weren't happy when we failed by any means, but like, I didn't ever feel like I was going to get fired. It's like, look, I found out a way that didn't work. I'm trying something else. And as long as we just have that good open communication, they let us do things. And that led to us being, you know, developing Athena with AWS. We were on it before it went general availability. We were already in production. We were helping close bug tickets. We did the same thing with Aurora. We had a data pipeline that was just super expensive. You know, part of my story was our cloud spend hit 500K. And then after we did some layoffs, like more than half the company got laid off. We were able, me and a couple guys were able to get that spend down to like 100K. And like that whole journey is what shaped why I started Observian. Because I got to the end of that, and sure, I had like Amazon and others trying to recruit me. It's like, why am I going to go do that? It's like, or I could go be a CTO at another SaaS tech company, but it's like, I could help more people if I do it as a partner and try to teach more people about this. Cause I joke all the time, you know, I just spin up an email and I've got access to AWS and I can spend up thousands of dollars if I click the wrong button. Like there's no Clippy that's like, hey, let's go through a guided tour. It's just, you signed up an account, the world's your oyster, click the wrong button and you're going to charge you for it. So that's that piece. Then you asked a bunch of questions about, you know, VARs, paper pushers, order takers, whatever you want to call them, the skilled cloud partners like myself and where that's going. So I think your assessment's pretty spot on. So we do pro service quite a bit. It's like when we're doing app modernization, like we'll help with the cloud. We've got some kickstarts. We've got like a big data kickstart and a container kickstart. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they'll do those with partner funding, or they're not huge transactions, but they're enough to get you to at least have hands-on experience with the technology, make a decision. And then if you want to keep going into more of a full-scale project, that turns into a pro service engagement with us. Mm-hmm. Then we do a ton of software resell. Like Aviatrix is one of many partners that we resell. And AWS Marketplace letting us do consulting partner private offers, great. I spend an obscene amount of time in the APM space with like the Dynatraces, you know, the Instanas, Datadogs, all those guys, AppDynamics. I've done quite a few webinars with those guys. So we're doing resell there. And then we have a managed security practice, and we're doing a lot of work with Lacework. And so we've pretty much done everything you said, right? So we're now doing services, we do software resell, and we're doing MSP. And I know I've been trying to be an Aviatrix MSP for pushing like 6 months. So this is just picking on Timo because it's fun. He's actually going to be here next week, I believe. And so I'll be hanging out with him, and we're going to be walking through what does that look like. So we're at the point where we've got, you know, as we've branched out, we even have a pretty solid collaboration team that focuses on Office 365 and G Suite. And we're even doing managed services around that as well.
Yeah.
And so like, yeah, our managed service is growing just as fast as our service side. We used to be services only. And we started in 2017. So let's call it 3.5-4 years. We went from being AWS services only to all three clouds, managed service. It's been nuts. It's been tons of growth. But we're just kind of going where the customers are asking us. Because what I feel like you said, we have the skills. We get in there. We gain trust pretty quick because we're not just reading, you know, like a well-architected review to you and saying we recommend this because that's what the book says. We're like, we've done this. It didn't work. Here's what we did instead. We have hands-on experience. I'd say every person on our team has at least 5 years of cloud experience.
Yeah.
So it's not like we're just saying, well, that's one way you could do it. Or like, oh, it depends. I guess you could do that. We'll tell you. It's like, that's bad, but here's why. Or like, that's really good. Didn't think about that. But like, let's, you know, make sure that we cover security on this. Let's make sure that we've got safe and repeatable. I'm always shoving safe and repeatable down people's throats. I try to get them to start with infrastructure as code on day zero. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you're never going to regret starting too soon with infrastructure as code. It might feel like you slowed yourself down, but in the long run, you're going to save yourself thousands of hours. If you start console only and your environment gets really big, how are you going to DR that or recreate it? Or are you going to spend all that time manually importing all those resources into your Terraform state? It just, I don't know. I see some customers that are just resistant to, you know, well, I want to crawl, walk, run. I'm going to do it in the console first. It's like, no, like automation is, if you're not doing it, your competitors are just, like you said, they're just going to pass you up. Exactly. I think I addressed all your questions. You fired off a bunch.
And that's great. And I think that honesty, I think that pays dividends, you know, with customers. That's how you get to become a trusted partner. And I think that, Justin, I think we've taken up, you know, tons of your time. You know, and just as we kind of wind up, you know, do you have a couple of pointers, a couple of things that you'd like to leave our audience with? You know, most of them on their cloud journey. What would you advise? What would you not advise?
So I am always pushing safe and repeatable architectures. And I'm spending a lot of time helping customers understand that if they don't do automation, the operational overhead slowly will just eat them away, right? Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is if I'm doing everything in the console, if you're not careful, you might have a dev or two that went from writing code to now they're babysitting infrastructure. And if you have an infrastructure team, this is probably, I'll be nicer to the infrastructure guys because this is one I run into a lot. I feel like I see teams that they think that they only need devs and engineers to go do the cloud, and they kind of like their infrastructure guys feel like they're going to lose their job. And I think Aviatrix does a really good job giving them a seat at the table and a voice. But I also try to teach those people Terraform, because if Terraform and Pulumi become a common language between mm-hmm. infrastructure and engineers, your traditional, you know, sysadmins who, you know, used to babysit VMs, they can now be some of your most critical people helping you with your global network, you know, spinning up Kubernetes. So it's like the real message here is like, don't be afraid to learn something. If you are like, I don't like change, I've been doing this for 15 years, I'm just going to stick into it. I really hope you're at retirement age because you're going to be replaced. But if you're like, look, I don't know how to do this, but I'm willing to learn. Like, I can't teach you to be passionate, but if you're passionate about learning, I can teach you anything. And I have a lot of customers where they feel threatened by us when we show up. It's like, look, we're not saying you're not doing a good job. We're just trying to help you save, you know, thousands of dollars of mistakes that I've personally already made. Like, learn from me. Like, you have the business context. You're worth 10 of me if I just teach you how to do the cloud. I know how to do cloud, but I don't know your business like you do. And so that's how I try to get them to think. It's like, look, the knowledge that you have about the way your company works is very valuable. Let's give you the skills to keep moving with what the market and the industry is doing. And now you're going to be that much more valuable. Like, I'm not going to replace you. I'm not going to have 10 years of, you know, context in your company.
No, that's,
loved it.
That's great. Yeah. Fantastic. Justin, appreciate you taking the time coming here to talk to us.
Yeah. I can meander about cloud anytime. Just let me know.
Thanks, Justin. Really appreciate it. It was amazing feedback and input and lessons learned. I'm sure our audience will love it. We look forward to another session sometime.
Yep.
Thanks, Justin.
Yep. Great talk to you guys later.
Thank you.